Well, welcome once again. And in the studio today, we have Tyler Butler with Terradice, along with some other organizations we're going to hear about. So, Tyler, it's good to have you here again.
Yeah, Mike, it's wonderful to be here.
We always enjoy having you on the air. And where do you want to start today?
Whew, oh, there is a lot of really great things happening in both Marion and Morrow County as far as environmental education and outdoor recreation. So there's lots to talk about. So where to decide to start? I'm not even sure, you know.
Just put your finger on something on that.
Yeah, I'll throw a dart at my notes here and see where
there
it lands. I guess first and foremost, important for Terradice itself, Terradice Nature Center, mm-hmm. just south of the village of Caledonia. We're pretty much right on that Morrow County, Marion County line.
What's the name of that road there? Is that
it's Whetstone River Whetstone, Road
yes.
North.
Right.
That's important.
Right.
Absolutely. So we are open. So we really never shut down too much. The house on property, the Romine residence, we rent that out through Airbnb, and then we also rent it to different groups trying to come in and, you know, have like organizational meetings or maybe even like a family reunion or a wedding or something like that. We shut down the house for a while for a couple months there due to COVID,
mm-hmm.
Of course. And so the house is opened back up. We're welcoming people through it, different groups coming through, either traveling, you know, to different parts of the state or out of state or coming in to meet with family. So that's pretty neat. Things are happening out there. But as far as the grounds itself, the property, all 4 acres is pretty much open, has been open. We've been welcoming visitors coming out to take a hike, take a look at some wildflowers, watch the birds, walk along the river. So it's been rather enjoyable. It's been a beautiful spring. It really has.
Okay. Now I'm going to throw a question out to you. You mentioned birds.
Yes.
What kind of birds are you seeing right along that area right now?
So right now, it's interesting. We had a heavy migration in the spring. I think the last time I was on this show here, it was just before the warbler migration.
Yes,
which is
I believe
about
it was.
First couple weeks of May.
Right.
And we had a wonderful interview with a gentleman named David Donahue. He lives in Columbus, and he works with, he volunteers for the Ohio Wildlife Foundation. And he volunteers. He goes and rescues birds. He's part of the Lights Out program, which is just during heavy migrations, trying to convince people to just shut off their lights. It can really help the birds with navigation.
Sure.
They use the moon and the stars.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of birds migrate at night. So it's very, very helpful during migration to convince people to shut off their lights, especially in the cities, you know. But that migration has gone through. A lot of those birds are up north. Ohio's in a weird spot. We are just kind of in the very southern range of a lot of birds.
Okay.
The neotropical birds, the really, really small ones, like the warblers, they are headed way up. I mean, they're already up north, but they breed way up north in Canada. I mean,
okay.
we miss out on a lot of that breeding territory, but right now, you're going to be seeing a lot of your familiar birds, your robins. Of course, the nuthatches are still around. Your woodpeckers are still around. Chickadees, titmice. You might even catch a glance at maybe some invasive birds like starlings. They are definitely the culprits in taking your suet.
I've seen quite a few blue jays.
Blue jays, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So
and
blue
they
jays
can be quite mean.
Blue jays are, yeah, pretty residential. So they stick around pretty much through all seasons. They can be incredibly aggravating, I guess.
Yes.
I wouldn't really call them mean. It's just kind of their personality. All as a group, their personality. They're very curious birds. They're very smart birds. So they're related to like ravens and crows, even though
okay.
they don't quite look like it.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fun stories about just the intelligence of blue jay. Well, really, that whole family, but just blue jays themselves. There's a great story, a study done. I can't remember exactly where it was at, but it was a scientist, a researcher. They were watching out in the wild some blue jays, and what blue jays will do is when they find a morsel, a little tidbit of food, they'll grab onto it and they'll fly to the ground. And if they don't need that food right then, you know, they'll bury it underneath the ground.
Oh, okay.
and what she was finding, this researcher, was she was finding that for a long time, the juvenile birds thought they were pretty smart. And they would hang out in the trees and they would watch the older birds catch something and then bury it in the ground a little bit. And then when that bird left, that younger bird would jump down and steal the food, not have to do much foraging for themselves, really. But what was funny was, as smart as that was on the juvenile bird side, the adult birds were figuring out what was happening.
Okay.
So they were watching the juvenile steal their food. Mm-hmm. And eventually what they began to do was they would pick up pebbles or rocks and they would bury them. So the juveniles would fly down thinking they've got something great to eat, and it's a rock. So
okay.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, great birds.
I know you have a lot to cover, but it seems like I've seen more cardinals this year than what we have in past. Is that something you've noticed?
I've not noticed that with cardinals. I mean, they're definitely that bright red color. You can't miss them. So, you know, you can always see them pretty much wherever they are, perching in the tree or in the shrubs. They're said to be, you know, good luck if you see a pair of cardinals, mm-hmm. right? It's always mm-hmm. said, you know, you know, something's happening or somebody's visiting you or, you know, something like that. But I have seen a lot of cardinals around. I wouldn't really say more than usual, but they're definitely out there. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite birds right now is very vocal. It would be all basically the flycatchers. We've got a great crested flycatcher that's nesting out at the Nature Center right now, which is really, really great. But just makes this call you can never forget. It's just kind of like a really screechy, you know, call. So you can always track them down wherever they are, because they are just loud and they go and go and go. But beautiful bird, really beautiful bird. So that's really what we're seeing around the Nature Center now and around Ohio. Really the big bird pushes are spring and fall during those migrations, trying to catch the birds mm-hmm. north and south.
Okay.
Yeah. So other than that, I mean, summer's really great for wildflowers.
Mm-hmm.
Really fantastic for wildflowers. Right now, we've got all sorts of, you know, Trella. she basically started Terradice, right? And she was a great horticulturalist. So she's got all sorts of iris and everything else planted out at Terradice. And some of those iris, really interestingly enough, Ray, her husband, when they bought the property, he was an iris hybridizer.
Okay.
So some of the irises we have at Terradice are special to Terradice. You can't find them anywhere else. Yeah,
okay.
They are Terradice hybrids, which is really incredible. We've got some really neat photographs of Trella and Ray standing in a portion of their property, just irises growing all around them, you know, and this is his hybridizing facility, I guess you would call it. But really, really incredibly beautiful plants. Right now, of course, we've got a bunch of hostas coming up. I'm sure everybody's got hostas everywhere.
I might come out and get some starch because I don't have any.
Yeah, you can take as many as you need.
They spread, though, pretty quickly, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hostas. You can't stop them. Yeah, I like hostas. They're good cover, but sometimes they can be too much. And right now, they are definitely too much for us. So, and they're in that.
Let me add to that, folks. Don't go out there and start digging up without permission.
Yeah, you can definitely ask.
Okay.
Yeah, if you ask, totally, totally doable. I'll help you dig them out. If you've ever been to Terradice, behind the Romine residence itself, there's that stadium bed, is what I call it. It's just kind of raised, layered beds mm-hmm. that lead down to the river there. And that's got some wonderful flowers in it, but it's just been taken over by hostas. Hostas and English ivy was a big problem in the fall. For several years before that. A lot of my time this spring has been going around the property and just finding English ivy and hacking it up, basically.
It's beautiful, but it takes
oh,
over.
Yeah. I mean, it takes over. It is. It looks like a plant you would find in some, or read about in like a Lord of the Rings book. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful leaf on that plant. But yeah, it is just terrible, and it spreads entirely invasive, chokes out natives, native ground cover. It'll climb up trees, you know, just put too much weight, too much pressure on that tree, which is not good over time, obviously. But yeah, so a lot of my time that or this spring has been pulling up English ivy and poison ivy, which is kind of my arch nemesis. I love the plant. It's fantastic. Poison ivy is great, as opposed to English ivy. So poison ivy is native, and it's fantastic. Really great flowering native plant. Humans really are the only ones that have a reaction to that oil on the poison ivy. So we're really the only ones that that get that allergic reaction, and that's what it is, even though we call it poison ivy.
Well, you had mentioned that it's a flowering plant. I did not know that they flowered.
Yeah, they flower.
But when do they?
Around this time.
Okay.
They'll start flowering. But really what's great about the poison ivy is the berries. So there are all kinds of birds, mammals, going around eating the poison ivy berries. It's a great food source for a lot of the native fauna.
Right. But not for humans.
But not for humans, no. Okay. That, it's definitely going to have that oil on it.
Right.
Which really is an incredible mechanism. It keeps us from messing with the poison ivy.
That's
you know,
true.
Obviously.
That's true.
And it just kind of binds to your skin cells. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I can't remember the exact number. It's got to be something close to like 75% of the population has the allergic reaction. And you hear all sorts of stories about, you know, whether people become non-allergic to poison ivy or whether you can become allergic to poison ivy over time. And there's all sorts of research behind that as well. And basically what they've come up with was, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Some things in nature we cannot explain.
Yeah. Basically the consensus is not a very good chance of developing a resistance to the allergic reaction. So if you're allergic to it, you're allergic to it.
I hadn't gotten it in several years. I know I've been around it. I kind of thought maybe I had developed a resistance to it.
Yeah, and I hear that too. Yeah. And like I said, it's really interesting. So there's no real one way or the other on poison ivy here. It's just, I mean, each plant is kind of different itself in how much of the oil it produces. You know, that affects your skin, and a lot of people don't realize how much poison ivy there is around. When we look at the vines, well, poison ivy comes in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and you know, when it's just sprouting up from the ground, it'll be tiny, teeny tiny leaves. Of course, leaves of three, leave it be.
That was just going through my head. I was going to say that.
Yeah, there are some strains in Florida, though. Interestingly enough, that have five leaves. It's five-leaved poison ivy. Which is pretty incredible. Yeah, poison ivy is incredibly diverse. We've got a few different strains here in Ohio. If you go north, you can find some western poison ivy. And then where we are south is eastern poison ivy.
Okay.
Which is pretty neat. It's kind of not useful knowledge because it's going to affect you the same either way. But it is interesting to look at the range maps and what sorts of areas these plants cover.
Now, is poison oak pretty prevalent in our area? I don't know if I don't think I know what that looks like.
Yeah, so we don't have any poison oak in Ohio. Ohio's pretty much, if you go to the Ohio River, basically you're at the northernmost portion of poison oak's range.
Okay, I thought it was around here.
Yeah, we have something, we have a sumac plant that's kind of similar. Well, we have sumac. We do have poison sumac. Which is a tree, basically. We have a plant that's similar to poison oak. It's called Virginia creeper.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and it doesn't give off the oil like poison ivy does. But the sap, some people have a really crazy allergic reaction to Virginia creeper sap. So we've got something to take poison oak's place, even though we don't have poison oak. But I'm trying to remember what we were talking about. Oh, wildflowers, what we were talking about.
Yes.
And of course, yeah, poison ivy is a great wildflower. But what else do we have there at? Well, we've got a lot of bellflower up right now.
Probably some trilliums.
Trilliums were earlier in the spring.
Our state flower, I believe.
Yeah, great white trillium. Yep. So they were fantastic. They were all over the west side hill there in the woods. I was doing a lot of trail maintenance at that time. Still doing a lot of trail maintenance here. We're putting in a lot of trails there at Teradice. So that was a good sight to see as I was, you know, hacking down poison ivy.
Well, you probably have some Dutchman's britches, as they're known as well. Do you know what those are?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That and, there's a lookalike, an almost lookalike that flowers at the same time, but that's an earlier bloom. That's around March. What is that plant called? It's squirrel's corn, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. But it looks similar to Dutchman's breeches there. Yeah. So, yeah, really beautiful flower. Mm-hmm. But we've got plenty of that. Out there at Teradice as well. It grows in between the house and there's a red shed. The shack is what we call it. It'll grow in the tree line there, which really gives off a lot of color in the spring when mm-hmm. not a whole lot's, you know, flowering, but we get some purple from the periwinkle that's growing around there. But other than that, well, and the obvious wild daffodils.
Okay, yes.
That, and I need to make a correction because last time I was on the show, you asked me whether or not the wild daffodil was native. And I said yes. And I was wrong. I was wrong. So
I'm going to make a guess. Now, I'm not sure, but I'm going to make a guess. I bet those come from someplace like England, possibly?
Yeah.
In Europe?
So around Spain. Yeah.
Spain.
Yep.
I was close.
Yeah, very close.
Okay.
Yeah, very close. But. Yeah, super similar climate over in Spain, and you know they were obviously brought over here for decorative purposes, and just kind of spread. And they're really beautiful plants, not really considered invasive, just kind of an exotic plant that you know pops up every spring.
Right.
So, yeah, but really giving off a lot of color again in March, April. So, of course, morning glory. I'm sure everybody's dealing with morning glory right now. Lots of vining. There may be some flowering pawpaws if you're lucky enough to find a pawpaw patch. That's the state fruit, pawpaw.
So, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you find the pawpaws next to the mamas?
Yeah. Usually, but not in this case.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a great, I wish I could remember where it was. In September, there's a great pawpaw festival in Ohio.
It's down in southern Ohio.
I think it's down
someplace.
South somewhere. Yeah, I wish I could remember where it was. I might look it up here in a second. But yeah, great pawpaw festival down there. Very fun. I don't know if they'll have it this year. I don't know.
Who
events are kind of crazy.
Year?
We'll talk about our events too and how they're going to work. But of course, pond lilies are really big right now. A couple varieties of pond lily. In Ohio, we've got the gigantic yellow pond lily. So it just kind of looks like a yellow ball of petals out housing all the frogs out there.
Hollyhocks. Do you have a hollyhocks?
Ooh, I haven't seen any.
Okay.
Yeah.
I figured that'd be something Trella would have. I don't know why.
That sounds like something Trella would have. Yeah, I haven't spotted any yet, but I'll keep my eye. Yeah, that does sound like something she would have. We've got some incredible volunteer milkweed out there.
Which, of course, is good for the monarch butterflies.
Which is great for monarch butterflies.
Sure.
It's also important to kind of look ahead with monarchs, too. Yeah, so the milkweed is fantastic for... So the adults will come in from their migration south, basically, and they'll find a common milkweed plant or, you know, milkweed, and they'll lay their eggs underneath the leaves. And right now, if you're lucky, you can go out to, and if you find some milkweed, usually growing along the roadside or on the edge of some sort of grassland or field or something, and if you lift the leaves up really, really gently, if you find these little kind of cream-colored spheres, orbs that's stuck underneath the leaves.
Yes.
So that would be a monarch egg. I've not seen a whole lot this year, unfortunately. Now, I know some people have pulled some younger caterpillars, and they're just kind of raising them into adults, so they'll raise them through pupation. but I've not seen many young caterpillars or many eggs myself, which is, I'm kind of curious about that. What it looked like from all the reports with monarchs was that they were heading north just fine. So I don't know exactly what happened, but we're not seeing a whole lot over at Terradyce or really in the Caledonia area. But hopefully we're just missing them.
Well, yeah. a question about that. I'm full of questions today.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Monarch butterflies. What do the caterpillars look like that turn into monarchs?
So the caterpillars have a really, really curious pattern on them. I don't want to say striped because I don't think it's quite striped, mm-hmm. But they're yellows, they're whites, they're blacks. I have this great, now here's one of the tools that I use all the time. The ODNR, our wonderful Ohio Department of Natural Resources,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Division of Wildlife, they create these really great field guides.
Okay.
For fauna and plants in Ohio, flora, and they give them out for free. I mean, you can get these for free. So if you go to the fair and you see, you know, the ODNR booth.
We have no fairs this year, so.
Well, yeah. if you exit your house at some point this year and end up on the ODNR's doorstep, okay. You can find these books pretty easily. Actually, they'll mail them to you, too.
Okay.
I don't know how easy it's going to be. The ODNR has kind of it's not a permanent site up right now. It's a temporary site. They're doing a lot of maintenance on their main site. Hopefully, it'll be up soon. But these field guides are wonderful. I'm holding one right now that's for butterflies and skippers of Ohio. Skippers are similar to butterflies.
Gilligan's friend, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it's right here. But you can turn it to and see pretty much all the variety of butterfly or skipper that you could find in Ohio. And they've got these for mammals and reptiles and amphibians and, there's shorebirds and common birds and raptors and a whole book for warblers and all kinds of stuff. But you can see right here a whole page of information on when you might see what sort of host plants these butterflies or skippers.
Oh, that's what they look like.
Yeah, might be interested in.
Let me hold this up to the microphone.
So everybody can see it at home, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I guess it is kind of striped yellow and black and white. They get about the size of maybe a little bit bigger than your pinky there when they're ready to pupate. But what a lot of people don't realize is the adults that start the migration aren't the adults that end the migration. It takes several generations to get from one point in the migration to the other. I mean, they travel thousands and thousands and thousands of miles. So Ohio's just one of those stops where they basically pop out another generation of monarchs and they keep on with their migration, which is pretty amazing.
I know some people that have planted milkweed specifically to help with the migration of these.
Yeah, and there's a lot of of like road departments that are also using medians to host milkweed. I said volunteer milkweed earlier, and that just means milkweed that we've not planted. It's just milkweed that, you know, has popped up. It's growing on its own. Pretty much any volunteer plant is a plant in your garden that just starts growing on its own without needing your help. But what's important for monarchs is the milkweed is incredibly vital for their life cycle. I mean, they lay their eggs on the leaves, the underside of the leaves, and when those eggs hatch, that milkweed hosts that caterpillar until it's got enough energy stored up to pupate. But after that, when they're adults, they need something to eat, and usually the milkweed's long gone, done flowering. So things like goldenrod or butterfly weed are also really, really important. Even catching the monarchs that are going through Ohio in the spring, something like lilac is really helpful for them.
Well, and that brings up a question. Do they help in pollination like bees do?
Oh, absolutely.
Carry the pollen maybe on their feet from one flower to another?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, lots of important pollinators out there. Butterflies are a big one. Of course, bees are a big one. But even things like bats. Bats are a big pollinator. Flies are a big pollinator. Mammals can be a big pollinator, too. So even the wind. I mean, the wind's a big pollinator.
Well, we can, too, if we walk through
tall weeds. Yeah, we do it all the time.
We can carry the pollen with us, too, and
absolutely.
Other group of weeds. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, I can't recommend those field guides enough. I mean, they are fantastic. And a lot of the bird field guides actually come with a CD with corresponding calls to all the birds that you'll find in there, which is incredibly helpful. So one of my favorite ones to play, like at camps or with kids that come in for like an education program, the Owls of Ohio calls are really, really fun.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, there are 7 common owls in Ohio, and if you can pinpoint them, you know, with just their call, you know, it makes it feel really good. Like,
well, I'm sure it does.
I know how to do this. Yeah, I know all the owls.
And what bird calls do you do personally?
Oh my goodness!
Oh, you do.
I do a great trumpeter swan.
Trumpeter swan. Okay.
no, we had when I used to work at. Of course, I'm going to ruin this great joke for all the tour guides over the wilds. But
go ahead.
One of my favorite jokes out there when we were taking kids through the educational tours in the pasture there, and of course the wilds is with the Columbus Zoo. It's out in near Zanesville, Ohio. It's located in Cumberland. It's big, wide 10,000 acre area, old strip mine land, and they have a bunch of grazing animals out there, extinct or threatened. Grazing animals, so things like rhinos and giraffe and all sorts of antelope species and things like that. So it's a really great area. But they also do restorative Ohio projects too, like with the osprey and American burying beetle. There's all kinds of great work coming out of there. The the hellbenders as well, big, massive salamanders. Mm-hmm. But they did a trumpeter swan project, and we used to always see them in one of the larger lakes out there, and I would stop the bus, and I would ask everybody if they wanted to hear my swan call. And then I would just yell, "Hey, swan!" You know, so it was pretty funny. It's a good joke. It's a good joke.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, that was pretty good.
We've got flowering out right now. We've got some fleabane. Those are going to be those white flowers with the yellow center on them. They kind of look like an aster.
Okay.
But they come up in the spring. Of course, asters are fall flowers. So those are incredible flowers. Those are one of my favorite spring flowers. I just think they're incredible. Really bright white. Evening primrose is probably blooming at this point. Beautiful yellow flower.
Primrose are really interesting in that they only come out at night.
Yeah, so they are really interesting.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful, beautiful flowers.
When they're flowering.
Yeah.
They're not flowering.
Yeah, just look like a big stalk, basically. Yeah. from a distance, it kind of looks like mullein. Mullein, another great plant. Probably flowering, right? Yeah, definitely flowering right now. So, of course, wild roses flowering.
I love wild
pretty
roses.
Beautiful.
I love the fragrance.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a good patch of them across the road from the Nature Center there, which is also Nature Center property. We've got trails on the other side of the road as well. So even though the trails we're working on, not finished quite yet, we're hoping very, very soon, within the next few weeks, we can open those trails up. It's a little bit of a problem with the terrain. it's rough. So we're just trying to even it out. Before we send people back there, but definitely closed-toed chew territory.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
But if you're waiting on those trails and you wanna walk it out, there's kind of like a labyrinthy trail across the Nature Center as well. There's parking over there too. There's a very, very small wildflower area over there, which leads to a tree line. You can walk back there and enjoy it. Really great stuff over there. Lots of diverse trees, and there's a beautiful American elm back there, bur oak back there, which is really well, two bur oaks back there, which are really, really incredible oak trees with really fun looking acorns if you catch them at the right time. But I love roadside flowers is what I really like.
Mm-hmm.
So I run every day. And next to fields, just out in the country, and just love looking at all the flowers, you know, all of the clovers and, you know, Dame's Rocket and corn poppy and all that kind of stuff right now, which is really incredible. There's lots and lots and lots of color on the roadside, so I would check them out.
Okay.
Not too closely if you're driving, but.
Well, you can't text, drive, and look at flowers all three, so come on.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one. Excellent. Well, I guess we've talked about the trails a little bit. We kind of hinted at COVID regulations. So we've got a plan out there to, of course, like I said, we are working on more trails. We've got about a quarter mile more trail added on the west side of the property and the lower portion. Really, all of Terradice is pretty low, but in the wooded area, we've got about a quarter mile trail marked out there. It's pretty wide, about 6 foot wide all the way through, which is nice, very, very accessible. The only thing, like I said, is some terrain issues just in a few spots. What's happened is the pond near the house, it just gets so much water that it tries to exchange with the river.
Okay.
That it just overflows that whole area occasionally and really cuts out some divots. So it's solving that issue, which shouldn't be an issue much longer. Just need a couple more days out there. We had some more prioritized projects come up, so that kind of had to take the back seat for a little bit. But I'm going to get back out there probably next week and finish carving those trails out and open them up. We're excited for that. I'm excited to have people come out. Terradice is great for, you know, an evening stroll, picnic. I mean, it's very beautiful out there. So I encourage everybody to check it out, even if those trails aren't open.
Well, a question I had too. There's an extensive library of nature.
Yeah,
books.
Absolutely.
Are those available to the public? I obviously not take home, but...
Yeah. Well, if you go to our website, there's a tab where you can search the books that we have in the library.
Okay.
And if there's something that you might be interested, you can search keywords. So if you're interested in wildflowers or if you're interested in basket weaving or, you know, we've got a huge diverse selection of books from Trella and her collection and Ray as well. And if you let us know what book you're looking for, I don't see an issue with people taking them home and checking them out and asking questions or just coming in to look at them. But that's something we definitely have to schedule just due to the library is located upstairs in the Airbnb. Mm-hmm. So definitely something that we would have to have first, the upstairs available. We don't disturb our guests when they're up there.
Understandable.
But yeah, the library is very, very open and like I said, an incredible selection up there. So I can't stop reading. Yeah, it's a and lots of Marion history, lots of Morrow County history. Of course, Trella was a big writer and historian herself.
Oh yes, she was.
Mm-hmm. So she's got a lot of her own personal books up there, which we take a lot of inspiration from when we're building our programs and trying to. Carve out, you know, the future for Terradice. So try and honor that side of Trella as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we invite everybody out to hang out on the property. Of course, you know, we try and just ask anybody coming out to hike parallel to the river or across the road that, you know, if it looks like somebody's in the house, just kind of give your distance there. We've not had an issue yet. Of just, you know, there's hiking trails and then there's the house that's sometimes rented out. So, like I said, beautiful area, as far as COVID goes and, what we're asking, from people on that end of things is, you know, we're not absolutely 100% requiring masks. We are recommending them though. When you come out, of course you're outside and if you're social distancing, you know, it's not going to be an issue.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. We do. I mean, we are taking, you know, the virus seriously, and doing mega cleanings and things like that. When we start to have programs again, our first actual program we have scheduled is for August 20th. August 20th, 6 to 8 p.m. We're gonna have Abby DiDomasi. She's going to come out. She's from Crawford County Parks, okay. And she's going to talk herpetology. So the study of things that creep, herpetology, which would be Ohio's native reptiles and amphibians. And she's also going to bring along, as far as I know, she's still bringing them. She's going to bring along some snakes and turtles and things like that with her as well. So, some animal ambassadors there, which will be nice.
Now, is that going to be geared towards youngsters or towards all ages?
Yeah. So that's what's interesting is we're doing it for a general audience.
Okay.
You know, anybody can come out and enjoy this program. Like I said, 6 to 8 p.m. On August 20th. It's going to be incredible. We're really excited to do it because we've had to cancel every other program that we've had scheduled this year.
Sure.
So we're excited for it. The big thing is we are limiting capacity, and we're doing the programs outdoors with that social distance spacing as well. So we're limiting it to 20 individuals. I'll pop on a registration sheet and keep track of people registering.
Okay, so pre-register.
Pre-register.
And once you get that 20,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, we're
you can join on the next one, folks, or something.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yes. And we've got some scheduled out here, depending on, you know, what happens in the fall. Some people say there's, you know, an impending second wave that might shut us down again. If that happens, we're going to be bummed. But you know what? You got to do what you got to do. So,
most certainly. Safety is first and foremost.
Safety is 100% first and foremost. 100%. So like I said, we've got Abby coming out in August and September, September 17th, of course, 6 to 8 p.m. We've got Ethan Simmons. I'm trying to remember which region he's in. I think he's a region one fish biologist. So he's going to come out and talk, basically aquatic life in the Olentangy River. And then he's going to take us down to the river, and we're going to do some electrofishing. So he's going to shock the water and see what comes up.
Okay.
So it doesn't hurt the fish, doesn't hurt anything in there. It just kind of stuns them for a minute. They come up, we identify them, and they swim on their way. So,
oh, wow, that could be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So, of course, that one's also going to be a limited capacity. This is just going to be our standard go-to for... this is going to be our standard go-to for, you know, the rest of the year is masks are going to be mandatory for scheduled events like this. We're going to do the social distancing, and we're going to limit it to 20 people. Other than that, we've got Django Grootmeyer. Not only does he have an incredible name, but he's got incredible knowledge on the fungus of the Olentangy River, so mushrooms. Yeah, so he's going to come out in October 24th, 6 to 8 p.m., and then one more scheduled after that, and that is Tyler Butler. Oh, my gosh. That's me. Oh, I'm going to do a program on birds. We're looking at the end of November for that. Right now it's scheduled for November 19th. I might push it back into December, however, so we can hit the Christmas bird count, which is an incredible, pretty much worldwide bird count.
Right.
Just so, and it's super helpful. It's really big citizen science event where people basically on.
Well, this is the year of taking the census, so it makes sense.
Right.
To count,
oh yeah,
count
yeah,
birds
yeah.
Too, you know?
Yeah. Except you count birds every year. Yeah. Sometimes a couple times a year. Let's see. I know we've not got much time yet, so I'll try and see how much of this I can get through. One thing I do want to mention is Abby, that's doing the herpetology talk, reptiles and amphibians, and Ethan, who's doing the fishing talk, the aquatic life talk. They are also both partaking in training our OCVN program initiates, I guess. So through MEEC, which is Morrow County Environmental Education Committee, they brought on some of the Marionites, James and I, to kind of help him out over there and help him schedule some things and get things going in environmental science and kind of the bi-county area, Morrow and Marion. And one of the things we have scheduled out is the OCVN, which is Ohio Certified Volunteer Naturalist Program.
Okay.
So anybody who's interested in becoming a naturalist and using those skills, I mean, you're going to learn a lot of ecology, biology, things like that. You're on a big system. for the state of Ohio that says you're a volunteer naturalist. You can volunteer at different state parks or things like that and just kind of share your knowledge with people of all ages. It's really incredible. It's a 40-hour course. It's going to start in August. It ends in October. There are several dates. You can find more information at, let me find this, go.osu.edu/MARO-OCVN. So we're doing a couple classes over at Teradice, like I said. There will be classes at Eco Center. There will be classes at Headwaters. So we're kind of moving all over the place, several different weekends, several different weeks. But the cost of that class is $165. That includes your education manual, a T-shirt, a badge once you finish the program, and meals for any Saturday programming, snacks for any Wednesday programming, or Thursday programming, I apologize. Teradice, if anybody's interested, Teradice is willing to sponsor or provide the funds for somebody to take that course. So if you are interested in the outdoors, you know somebody who's interested in the outdoors, 18 and up, and you think they might be willing to go through our OCVN program, have them contact me either through the Teradice Nature Center Facebook page. You can email me at tbutler@teradice, that's TERRADICE, I almost did it again, .org. That's pretty important. The other thing, Adventures in Morrow County, it is now merged with Marion County. So it's a family program. It's self-guided. And basically, the whole idea is around promoting outdoor recreation and healthy lifestyles for families. So you get your family together, you get a booklet, the AIM booklet, and it's got 8 parks inside of it. If you visit 4 of those parks, you're going to find a question somewhere at the park. The question's going to be in your booklet. You'll find the answer there. For instance, at Teradice on the greenhouse, we have an animal paw print. And if you visit Teradice and find that paw print and you write whose paw print it might be in the booklet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So once you answer that question, if you visit 6 parks, your family's name is put into basically a big drawing for some door prizes, basically. So we're looking forward to that. That program ends on Labor Day, so it's September 7th. So if you get that booklet, print it out, visit 6 parks, and turn it back in to the Morrow County Extension Service office by the 7th.
Okay.
You're good to go. You're in the drawing.
That's out on 42 with the...
Yeah, it's in the Ag Credit building.
Yeah, Ag Credit.
There.
That's what I was trying to think of.
Just outside of Mount Gilead.
The old Carruti Farm, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you who have been around Morrow County for a while.
Yeah. The other big things we have coming up, you can check out Teradice's YouTube channel. We've got some cool kids programs going on out there. Field Journal Fridays gets kids involved in outdoor recreation and environmental sciences. We've got 3 videos up. We've got some other video content up there as well. We're trying to provide as much as possible right now. So we're pretty excited about all of that. We've got several different projects. We've got a Patreon up, which is basically small monthly donation style fundraiser. You can check us out on there if you are interested. And Eco Camp, so over at the Eco Center with Emily and Paco.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was wanting Emily to be on here today, but I guess she's out of town.
Emily's out of town right now, yep. We're excited for camp. Teradice is providing all of the curriculum for camp. I'll also be out there as an educator, so if your kid's going to Eco Camp, there might be a few spots left if you go to ecocenterohio.com. You can get all the information for Eco Camp there. It's August 3rd through the 7th. Like I said, there might be a few spots. 5 to 11 is the age range.
Okay. So, what time of day is that, or is that?
9 to 4.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nine for how many days? You might
5 days. Yep. Monday through Friday.
Days. Okay.
Yep. Like I said, I'll be out there as an educator. If you know Emily, she'll be out there as an educator. We're also bringing in another really accomplished educator as well. So it's going to be a great camp. We're going to do thematic days. There's a wildflower day. There's a woods day. There's a water day. Friday's obviously just fun day. But We've got the kids out in the woods. I mean, it's totally an outdoor camp. Kids don't go inside. We are going to follow Ohio's COVID regulations for day camps. So the educators will be wearing masks. We'll be washing our hands very, very regularly. We will be practicing social distancing as much as possible. But we're just going to get the kids outside. We're going to play some field games with them. We're going to do some environmental science. We're going to do some crafts they can take home. So it's going to be good. It's going to be good. I'm excited for it. As an educator, I haven't gotten to do a lot of educating face-to-face this year. Things just kind of got held up.
Yeah, that's understandable. like the whole world.
Like
right
the
now.
Whole world, yeah. So I'm excited to get out there with the kids, have fun, run around a little bit. Teach some science, so it'll be a blast.
Okay, I think we have about another minute left.
Yeah.
What is a good way to find out, and I know you told this earlier, a good website or someplace to check out what's going on at Terradyce?
Yeah. The best place to go, because we update it as regularly as possible, is our Facebook page. So if you go to Terradyce Nature Center Facebook page, we're right up there. We try and keep it rolling with content. We post all of our videos on there. We start to, you know, have conservation conversations on there. Really great place to be. I enjoy running that page there. We're on Instagram. Terradyce Nature Center. And if you go to our website at www.terradyce.org, you're going to find our website, which is also updated pretty regularly. If you come out, take pictures at Terradyce, we'll feature them on the website. That's something that I really want
to do. Well, Tyler, thanks for stopping in today.
Absolutely.
And be listening again next week to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1 FM.